Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in Car Chronicle Podcast. We're recording this on Wednesday, October 28th. Mike Rutherford here in Louisville, Kentucky. Dan Sinard in Columbus, Ohio. And Dan is ready to fire off his hot election takes. This is going to be a presidential election episode.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's sneaking up on us, I guess. I've kind of been focused.
It's not sneaking up on us. Everybody in the world knows that the election is 66 days away, but I genuinely, and I mean this with all due respect, can't think of anybody who would be worse to give some in-depth political takes right now than Dumpster Dan Sinard.
Yeah, that's just one thing I don't really dive into. Like, it's funny, we're on a text thread, and I mean, politics does get brought up every once in a while, and like I usually just kind of go completely dark during it, but it's entertaining to watch.
There it is. Well done, Dan. That's the 30 minutes of political discourse that you're going to get from Dumpster Dan on today's episode. But we are going to talk much more pleasant things this week, namely the fact that Louisville just fucking curb stomped Florida State last weekend, and it was a much, much needed victory, I think, for everybody involved with Louisville football. I don't think I realized how much I needed a weekend like this past weekend until it actually happened. Like, watching Louisville beat the brakes off I get it, they're an average at best FSU team. Still, it's Florida State. We needed a win of any sort, and to finally play the type of game that I think we all believed this team was capable of playing was pretty awesome. To watch that, and then to watch Kentucky look totally anemic against Missouri, to watch our mutual friend Brian Brohm win for Purdue, I thought that was awesome. His first game as a head coach, filling in for Jeff, who's got COVID-19. And then the Lions on Sunday winning a game that the Lions lose a million times out of a million was just awesome. Did the Vikes even play? Did they win?
They actually had a bye, but they.
Okay, didn't lose.
The season's over, but yeah, they didn't lose.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the Lions aren't doing anything, even though they're buyers at the trade deadline for some reason. I don't know what they're doing, but whatever. Like, it was nice to have a sports weekend that was overwhelmingly good. I mean, it felt like it hadn't happened since God knows when, but it was just, I think, a much-needed overall day. And like I wrote on Card Chronicle, beating Florida State 48-16, it doesn't change the fact that Louisville – you know, lost its first four ACC games, or that this season is not going to be as special as some of us hoped it was going to be. And it doesn't guarantee that we're going to be that good the rest of the year. But for right now, like, we needed that. We needed that cathartic moment, that just beating somebody down, the offense playing as well as it possibly can, the defense looking, you know, really good for a second weekend in a row. I think it was just, we all had to have that type of game. It was just a really enjoyable experience.
Yeah. And I think that the kids on the team definitely need it, just to know that, I mean, cause they, you know, they had performances like that last year, and just to know that they're still capable of doing that. And like you said, FSU looked, I don't even want to say average. I mean, they looked pretty bad. I think they got a long way to go. But you know, I know we lost the Notre Dame game, but I'd say that's two pretty good weeks in a row. And we have five, you know, winnable games. I'm not saying we're going to be favoring everyone, but five winnable games going down the stretch. And, you know, if you can win four of five, or, you know, God willing, five out of five, that I would call that, you know, depending on how I would look at it as a successful season. But, you know, it just kind of, that win was nice. We'll see. Virginia Tech will be interesting, because I think Just kind of looking on paper, we kind of match up evenly. But I was very happy with the win on Saturday. And like you said, it made the weekend a whole lot better.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, now the topic for Louisville fans has kind of become, well, can they win out? And it's weird to think about this team, you know, heading into the season, if you'd said they're going to go 7-4, they're going to be 6-4 in the ACC, and they're not going to beat Notre Dame, they're not going to beat Miami. We all probably would have looked at that and been like, eh, it's a season. But now, after getting behind the eight ball through the first month and a half of the year, winning out and, you know, being 7-4, I feel like it's more, this season has become more about kind of the direction of the program, continuing to take a step towards where we want to be. We definitely took a step in the right direction last year. How much of a step this season winds up being, who knows, and how much it really matters given the current state of, you know, everything is sort of up for grabs too. But the fact that, I mean, the difference between this year's team responding to a four-game losing streak and what we saw from 2018, where they just completely folded up 10. You had the story that came out in The Athletic a couple years ago where players were saying after that Florida State game, like the coaching staff was – they weren't even updating like the players of the week charts. They weren't talking to us. We weren't having meetings. Like everybody just kind of threw their hands up and gave up before the season was even halfway over. To see the difference between that and what we've seen from this year's team that has, even when they've not been playing well, they've certainly been playing hard. They've been competing. And I thought it was really interesting. The little video that U of L put out of the post-game celebration, Scott Satterfield is talking to the team and he says, you know, we told you guys last night that we felt like an explosion was coming. Like I'd say that was an explosion and everybody goes nuts. Like I think what we've all seen is the same exact thing that the staff has seen. They're better than they were. They're better than their 2-4 record. They're certainly better than their 1-4 record in the conference. And it just, it's felt like this team has been so close, not greatness, like not being one of the 10 or 15 best teams in the country, but being a legitimately good football team. And it's been the self-inflicted stuff that has just driven everybody crazy. The penalties, certainly the turnovers, the leaving guys wide fucking open against Miami 15 times, like all that stuff. It's just been so, again, to use the word, frustrating for the first month and a half of the season. But you did kind of get the sense that a performance like this was coming. Didn't know if it was going to be against Florida State, but to have it happen against one of the bigger brands in the conference certainly was good. But I think I'm with you. I think if the last 2 weeks have shown us anything, it's that this is who this team is going to be moving forward. Like you said, not guaranteeing that they're going to win out or that they're not going to have a couple more games where they have a couple bad turnovers and a few bad penalties, but the effort's going to be there. The execution's going to be better than it was against Miami or than it was against Pitt. And that's comforting because if they do take care of Virginia Tech, let's say they win all but one of their, you know, the remaining games, I think that's if they can get to 6-5, play a decent opponent in a bowl game, get some momentum going. It's not going to be the type of season that we're all as excited about as we were a year ago, but it's something. I think it's another step towards getting this program back to being consistently national, which is what we're all hoping for right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And for the guy, especially on offense, it kind of reminds me of like a basketball analogy, you know. Like a good shooter, they see the ball go through the hoop once and they kind of get in the zone. And it was nice to hit on some of those big plays. You know, you had Javion break off the long run, you know, with the long pass to Tutu. Marshawn Ford broke one for, you know, 30, 40 yards. So, like we said, we know that, you know, this team is capable of doing stuff like that. And you hope with 1 week of being able to kind of put it all together, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And the defense, I mean, they played well too, although Florida State, I know, had many drop passes, but
it was unbelievable, by the way.
It really was. I was like, my God.
Everyone they brought up looked like the kid from the Little Giants who, like, needed to stick him to catch the ball. Like, I'm like, because you know if they played for Florida State at a specialty position, they're a former, like, four-star recruit at worst. Like, who are these kids who just – they look like flag football kids trying to catch the ball. It was like they didn't even look like they know how to catch. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get to it at some point, but the drops at the end of the game were definitely satisfying if you're looking at the Chubba Purdy stat line at the end of the game. But, no, I mean, I think it's a little easier to respond the way we did this week, coming off a very tough loss where we played well, where you knew the guys were going to have a chip on their shoulder. So let's see how they respond after a blowout win coming in this Virginia Tech game. And if they can keep clicking like they did this week, I think that'll show us a lot going, you know, towards these last four or five games of the season.
I want to ask you this. Do you, like, I feel this every single week and I feel bad about it. I feel like I'm taking Javian Hawkins for granted. Like he is so good week in, week out. 16 carries, 173 yards, three touchdowns this past weekend. He had the unreal 70-yard touchdown run to kick off Louisville scoring. Here's the analogy. I made it on the site, and I'll make it again here. Remember when Rick Pitino took over for the basketball program? They were in kind of a bad place. When Charlie Strong took over for the football program in 2010, they were in a bad place. Both those guys, I think they utilized the fact that they had, I mean, maybe not a transcendent player, but certainly a star that they could build around. For Pitino, it was Rhys Gaines, and he said a bunch of times, if we didn't have an All-American, this rebuild wouldn't have happened nearly as quickly as it did. They were competitive in his first year, and they were a four seed in his second year, and he gave most of the credit of that to Rhys Gaines. With Charlie Strong, it was, remember, he made the big deal of Bilal Powell being the face of the program. I think he saw right away what somehow Steve Kragthorpe was totally unable to see, which is, I've got an NFL running back here. Let's build this team around him in year one. And it was successful. I mean, Powell had an unreal season in 2010 and then parlayed that into a decade-long NFL career. I think Javian Hawkins is that guy for Scott Satterfield. And I know we have a lot of talent. I know Tutu Atwell gets a lot of attention. I know Malik Cunningham was really good last year and has been, you know, okay this year. Des Fitzpatrick was certainly a big name when Satterfield arrived. But I feel like Hawkins is that guy for Satterfield where if you take him out of the equation, all of a sudden this quote-unquote rebuild is significantly slower. I think with the way that Satterfield wants the offense to work, you have to have a dynamic back, or at least a guy that you feel comfortable giving the ball to 20 times a game. And he's got that in Javian Hawkins, who has just been so good. Do you think that – does that analogy work?
Oh, 100%. And he's getting better, it seems like. It's nice because you can run in between tackles. You know, he can bounce outside. He had the one run this week where he cut left and there was penetration in the backfield and he kind of went all the way back around to the right and outran everyone. So, I mean, he's built like a mini Michael Dyer, except he's a lot faster. He's just an absolute bowling ball out there. And how many more years of eligibility does he have?
Technically got three left because this year doesn't count against him.
So is wild because, I mean, when you think about that, you know, then you start thinking about, you know, all the running back records that he could have by the time he gets out of here. But running back's such just like a position where, I mean, he's obviously incredible. I do think about his future. I'm like, man, I think he's good enough to where he's going to be gone, you know, before if he decides he wants to go after he's eligible for the NFL draft, he probably will. Just because, you know, you run like 4 to 5 years of being a running back in college, that's a lot of mileage before you get to the NFL. So, you know, for his sake, I hope he goes in the NFL. Kind of fresh. Not saying I want Scott to, you know, put shackles on him or anything, but he's the total package. And like you said, I don't know where we would be without him at this point.
Yeah, he's technically a redshirt sophomore, so he could, if he wanted to, go to the NFL draft after this season, or he could stay here for three more years, which is sort of an outrageous thing to think about. My guess is he splits the difference there, and he definitely plays next season, maybe plays the year after that in 2022, and then says, enough is enough. I may not be an NFL back, but I'm at least going to try my hand at it. But, I mean, he's been just so solid and so good week in, week out. It is unreal. And, I mean, the size, when you look at him, he's one of those guys, it's not just when he's in pads. When you look at him in dress clothes, he looks like a man baby. Like his body just it doesn't look right. And the fact that he can take that frame and take the punishment that he takes week in, week out, he hasn't been hurt. Like he is, I'm knocking on wood right now, but he has been a guy that you can feel comfortable to giving the ball 15, 20, 25 times a game. And he just keeps going. And it's not all speed. He breaks a lot of tackles. He picks up a lot of yards after contact. And I just think, when all said and done, and I know Cameron Teague Robinson of the Courier Journal posed this question during the game saying, you know, where do you think Javion Hawkins is going to rank on the list of all-time running backs whenever he leaves Louisville? I mean, he's got to be top five. And I think probably in the end he's going to wind up being top three. And the stats are probably going to say that he's, you know, one number one or number two because he's going to rack up a whole host of yards. But
let's ask you this. Your number one Louisville running back, let's say, of the last 25 years.
It's tough because, like, if you're looking at it from – a talent standpoint, I think Michael Bush has to be, if not at, near the top, but his numbers don't really back that up because he was, you know, doing so many different things early on in his career and wasn't a full-time. And also Bobby Petrino loved to split the carries up with guys. You know, it was, Bush wasn't the feature back really until the end of the 05 season or halfway through the 05 season and then the start of the 06 season when he broke his leg in week one. But, I mean, he'd have to be up there. I'd have to put Bilal Powell up there, even though, again, he only had one season as the feature back, which was ridiculous. It's kind of become a common theme, too. When you look at, I said Steve Kreithorpe didn't utilize Bilal Powell correctly. Javion Hawkins had two carries for 8 yards under Bobby Petrino in 2018, which just seems fucking ridiculous when you look at what he's done in the 2 years since. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, OGs are going to have Lenny Lyles up there from back in the day. You've got Eric Shelton. You've got a lot of guys, but it's hard to make a list that doesn't have Javion Hawkins, I think, in the top three at this point.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Guy we're leaving out, Ralph Dawkins. Absolutely love that guy. But, yeah, I mean, the way Michael Bush looked heading into that season, when I mean, the first half he put up against Kentucky was one of the more – I mean, I just had not seen a player in a Louisville uniform look like that on a football field before, just how dominant he was. So that obviously that was a tough pill to swallow. But, yeah, I mean, we've definitely had some good ones in the last 20, 25 years. And depending on how long, you know, Javion decides to stay, obviously he's going to be right up there with him.
We have to take a moment to acknowledge it was a fantastic Saturday for Louisville. I hate to use the word memes because I don't think it actually applies here, but just like Louisville fan and coach videos and pictures that can be utilized moving forward. You had in the first half, you had the guy, I think his son tweeted that it was his dad. I think his last name is Goodman, the guy who was just holding up double one and just held it for like what felt like 10 seconds on TV. That was great. You had the dude in the vest with the pipe and the drink who was dancing it, but right before halftime, that was awesome. You had the Scott Satterfield, I don't even know what we're calling it, the sat dance, the sat shuffle in the victory video. Like, that was awesome. It was just a really good feel-good day, and it's weird to think that a regional sports network game where you've only got 12,000 fans in attendance could produce so much great content, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and the thing about our fan base, when you think about it, I mean, some of these other fan bases, you know, when you think of their fans, you think of like student sections. And I mean, for Louisville, that's just really not the case. We might have the median age is going to be a little bit higher for football and basketball. But for football especially, I don't know why I love it. Just the crowd shots of the older fans who, you know, have just gotten plastered in the parking lot all day.
Yeah.
Is just, I don't know. It's just kind of part of who we are. And I fully embrace every second of it.
The guy who was standing next to the famous defense guy in the crunch zone last year, who airboxed after a touchdown for like 20 was maybe the high point of the 2019 season. Like, those guys, I live for those guys. I want to be that guy in like, well, hell, I mean, like 10 years from now, we're getting a little bit close. The other thing that I mentioned is, and I love that Ryan McMahon got in on this too. This was for those fucking bitches, the Vipers, the bench walk-ons from the Florida State basketball game who tried to fight Rimac back in February. We owed them a beatdown, and it couldn't come on the court because the ACC tournament got canceled, but it had to come on the field. So this was for Ryan.
For Ryan. I'm still not over that game, by the way. Not between even. That and Jordan just getting absolutely fucking crammed on, that was one of the tougher watches of the season, but. Who knows? We'll see what happens this year. I think Florida State's probably loaded, but we'll see what happens.
Let's talk. The other thing to talk about when it comes to this game is the Schadenfreude of two former Louisville quarterbacks, or I guess one former Louisville quarterback and one player who was committed to play for Louisville, took all the snaps from Florida State on Saturday, and they both fucking sucked. It was At first, it looked like it was going to be the Jordan Travis revenge game. He had a couple of ridiculous runs on their first drive. He had the, I mean, I don't even know how to describe the first touchdown for FSU. He dribbled the ball five times, broke through the worst tackling I've ever seen and scored. And at that point, I mean, every Louisville fan in the world was like, here we go. Here we go. Like, this is the day. Travis for 5,000 yards, and we're going to lose by 70. But it didn't happen. He did not look great. Threw about five balls that should have been picked. Had some good runs, but really didn't do much through the air. And then Chubba Purdy comes in at the end, and just a disastrous stat line. Kelly Dickey pointed out that Chubba Purdy set a UofL opponent record for the most passes in a game without a completion, going 0 for 9. The overall Florida State completion percentage was 34%. They were 14 of 41, and that was the lowest by a Power 5 opponent against Louisville since Florida State back in 2016, when they completed 33% of their passes in that huge blowout on College Game Day. Look, I don't fault Jordan Travis for transferring, and I thought it was interesting that a lot of former players were like supporting him during this game. Jalen Smith tweeted about it. Mekhi Becton tweeted about it. They thought he was going to play really well. I think all guys wanted Jordan Travis to be the quarterback back in 2018. But Chubba Purdy, I don't fault an 18-year-old for making a decision that he feels like is the best in his best interest. But I also don't have to cheer for you. I also don't have to not take pleasure when I see you just look like a complete disaster against the team that you were supposed to play for and that you kind of let on a little bit during the recruiting process. So
exactly. That's exactly like, yeah. It would be one thing if he, you know, kind of during the thing said, you know what, they just hired, you know, Mike Norvell. Maybe I'm probably going to back out of my commitment and reevaluate my options, but to make a switch the day of signing day. Yeah. I mean, I'm never going to, you know, actively root against a kid's success. But when you're playing the team I cheer for, it obviously does make it a little bit sweeter when you watch him struggle. So, yeah, and Jordan Travis, he looked a little banged up to me. I don't know if he was 100% healthy. But, yeah, just overall, Florida State's offense just looks so unorganized. A lot of penalties, real sloppy, and neither quarterback particularly accurate, although, like we talked about, definitely let down with a lot of the drop balls by the receivers.
Yeah, when on their last drive after I think it was Rajay Burns fumbled the punt and gave FSU the ball at like the 15-yard line, I was more into that series than I was pretty much any series in the second half. Like, I really did not want Chubba Purdy to score. And two is, I guess, it wasn't his fault entirely. He had three passes that I think were dropped by the same guy who just could not catch it all. And he's like putting it right in his breadbasket and just couldn't hold on to it. But I was glad to see Anthony Johnson make three plays in a row. That was cool to see. But it was just keeping them out of the end zone. It felt good. I didn't want that. First of all, the score would have looked better than it should have. And second of all, Chubba Purdy, you always want to let them know that you made the wrong choice. It's like, we'll do the sports cliche thing where you have to compare everything to a relationship, but it's like in an amicable breakup, you can be happy for that person. You might even want them to be happy, but you don't want them to be happier than you are. Like, you want them to be a little bit less happy than you are. And that's the case with Chubba Purdy. It's fine.
Yeah.
Against us, I hope you shit the bed.
Exactly. And it is nice to kind of know that, you know, Florida State's in a situation to where they've already had to thrust this kid into action, whether he's ready or not. And, you know, we have the comfort of having, you know, some quarterbacks ahead of T. Webb, who was kind of the other guy, you know, that maybe not as much hype around him. And then Chubba obviously decommitted. So T. Webb kind of became our number one guy. And it's nice that we're able to kind of just, you know, sit back and let him develop without any pressure. And hopefully down the line, he's going to, you know, outplay Chubba for his career. We'll see how that goes.
We have to give a special podcast shout out to podcast favorite Jack Fagot. The nickname has become Jack Fagot, and he supports it. He favorited it on Twitter, so he's all for it. The only person in our secondary who seems capable of catching a pass, it was a tip, but whatever. Jack Fagot already owns Trevor Lawrence, picked him off last year famously. Has Trevor Lawrence shook? He's been terrified all season long. Trevor Lawrence now apparently considering coming back to Clemson for his senior season. I think that's entirely based on the fact that he can't play well against Louisville. He wants a third chance at him next year. But now Jack Fagot just tearing up Florida State. The two Atlantic Division powerhouses are they're owned by Jack. So shout out to the Fagot. He's the man. We love him. Any final thoughts about the Florida State game before we move on here, Dan?
I am very interested to see how they do the rest of the season because I was very underwhelmed. But again, I was underwhelmed by Notre Dame the week before, and then they went out and beat Pitt like a drum 45-3. That was probably the most shocking score of the week to me. But yeah, it just seemed like very unorganized, not very well coached. I know it's his first year, but for some reason, I can see them trending downward the rest of the year.
I'm with you. It seemed the North Carolina game, I think we're going to look back at as sort of a fluke this year. But I kind of thought Mike Norvell was a good hire. It's been a total disaster since he got there. And it's probably going to be later rather than sooner before that changes. So we're going to answer some questions from Twitter here. Before we do that, I want to remind you guys that the podcast and the site are now sponsored by Home Field Apparel. Home Field Apparel launched their new line of U of L gear back on October 17th. If you haven't checked it out, do so. If you like vintage gear, if you just like soft, cool Louisville shirts and hoodies, check them out. And you can save money on your first purchase. You can save 20% by using the promo code CARDCHRONICLE, all one word, at checkout. People said, why don't you put the link to the Home Field site in your show notes? We're going to start doing that now on the pod. So if you want to go check out the Home Field Apparel line of Louisville gear or their line of other colleges, they've got like 500 colleges now that they have cool retro gear for. We'll put the link in the show notes. It's also always on the website. You can check it out there. So again, if you need Louisville gear, get your Christmas shopping done early, or just make a little present for yourself, go to homefieldapparel.com. Follow them on Twitter at homefieldapparel, no E in apparel there. And again, use the promo code CARDCHRONICLE at checkout to save yourself 20% on your first purchase. All right, Dan, last week before we recorded, I asked people for Twitter questions. I then completely forgot that I asked them for Twitter questions, and we didn't answer any of them. I answered a few with Keith on the Friday pod last week, but are you ready to get into these?
Let's do it.
All right, we'll start here. This is a brilliant first step here. We've talked no basketball at all, but my guy Austin Montgomery wants to know, what was your favorite Angel Nunez moment? Angel Nunez comes up on this pod far too often, far too frequently.
Yeah, God, that's like, you're really catching me off guard with this one. I can't say any stick out. I remember a home game, he hit like an NBA range three, and I was like, here he comes, Angel Nunez. And then I don't think we heard from him until he transferred to Gonzaga again. So if you got one that sticks out, I'll let you take the floor here.
I think my favorite Angel Nunez moment is when his former AAU coach signed up for an account on Card Chronicle and hijacked every thread for like a solid month. The post would be like Louisville football 2013 schedule set. And the first comment would be like this guy, and he'd be like, why don't you fucking ask Rick why he's not getting Angel out there for months? Like, oh my God. It was so bad. I think we ended up having to ban him. I think Angel Nunez's former AAU coach had to get banned from the site. But there was a while there where he was like, in every game, like Angel would come in at the end of a 50-point blowout and make an uncontested breakaway layup, and he'd be like, see, I told you guys. And we're all right, man. I don't know. That's the definitive Angel Nunez moment in my mind.
What class was he in? He was in, like, a pretty good class, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I can't think of it off the top of my head. I'll have to go back and look. But, yeah, it just might have been a case of that's when we were uber talented and – he didn't really get a chance to showcase. I mean, he did all right at Gonzaga. He at least saw the floor. We'll give him that.
Yeah. Paul Allen, is Will Smith good at baseball? That's World Series champion Will Smith. Shout out to him.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. First Louisville-born person to hit a home run in the World Series, and now first U of L alum to play in the World Series and win a World Series. Who would have thought that the first like Louisville-born player to win a World Series would be somebody who went to KCD?
Yeah, I mean, shout out KCD. And I mean, I think this is just the beginning for this kid. I think he's really good. Like the comparison is a long way away, but I've seen Buster Posey comparisons to him just with, you know, how clutch he is. kind of his demeanor behind the plate, how he calls the game. And I was so glad they won because I know he had the mishap in game five with the swipe tag. And I did, you know, I'm sure he felt awful about it. You know, I did not want him to be remembered for that play. So just by winning, that totally erases that. And I think we're, you know, as a Reds fan, there's probably maybe two or three players on the team that I wouldn't trade for him. I think that's how good and valuable he is.
Yeah, he's awesome. And it's weird, not weird, but like, when you think about those great Louisville baseball teams that we've had over the past decade, he was certainly a really, really good player, but I didn't think that he was going to be the star that he's been since he got called up last summer. I mean, he's been phenomenal. And you see, I mean, he's the first catcher to have a five hit game in the postseason ever. Like, that's pretty remarkable. He's been, and I know he did tag it in the World Series. He didn't hit all that well, but he almost hit a home run last night. I'm with you. I think he's going to be a really, really good player for a really long time. And that's a good thing for Louisville baseball. Let's see here. Casey says, we have a hot take on this Greg Marshall stuff. Not a hot take. I mean, not shocking news to anybody who I think has watched a Wichita State game for the last 10 years. Not a good guy. Greg Marshall, kind of a bad dude.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I think, and it's not like we're the only ones. I think everyone around college basketball knew that, you know, I just don't understand how a guy like that gets recruits to come. It boggles my mind. I mean, because not only is he an asshole and everyone can see it, but you're coming to Wichita, you know, in a conference that's not a Power Five conference. So could he coach? He could 100%. But it's just the juice kind of isn't worth the squeeze if you're, you know, getting physically beaten by your coach, in my opinion.
I mean, I don't think there's any question. He's a brilliant basketball coach. He's a massive asshole. And I don't think Wichita State's going to fire him because, I mean, let's just say it. All that Koch brothers money got put
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
Like that's, yep. I mean, that's, there's no other way around it. They're going to do everything they can to not fire him. And the fact that he's had multiple players, both from Wichita State and Winthrop, tell the same types of stories and they still haven't acted is just –
We've reached the point in college basketball where you actually have to physically murder someone to get fired, I think, because yeah. with what everyone's doing to keep their jobs, just the things that you have to do to get fired are astronomical at this point.
Tyler Kolb says, how hard should Mac press to get DePaul into the Louisville bubble this year? Harder than he is. We need to get DePaul in there. By the way, keep an ear out for some expanded Louisville bubble talk coming up here relatively soon. I think we could get some, at least one pretty cool team into this thing that would make it a lot cooler. But we'll see. We'll see. But would
yeah,
you,
I mean, with the Orlando thing falling apart,
yeah.
it just seems like there's a lot of moving pieces right now. So, I mean, yeah, hopefully some of that lands favorably to the Louisville bubble, but I guess we'll wait and see.
Brent Eversole says, what's your favorite Dan quote?
my senior quote in my yearbook was from AC Slater. It said, I was in the seat, I'll take the heat. Which looking back is just utterly ridiculous and dumb, but yeah, I don't know. I think everyone that listens to the podcast would think my favorite quote would be "Yeah, no," because I seem to contradict myself a lot. But I don't really have like a Mark Twain quote that I bust out too often.
Yeah, no, you know, or literally the top three podcast quotes for sure. I'm trying to think like you. You've definitely made me laugh more over the years than I think anybody else in my life. But usually it's not like your witty one-liners. It's usually just you doing like your storytelling or you just doing something stupid. I'm trying to think of my favorite. This isn't a line, but I love the fact that – so your junior year in high school, you wrote for the student newspaper at Trinity and you wrote a whole column about the best water fountains in school. Like
oh God, that was an absolute, that kind of put me on the map in high school, to be honest. It really did. I was a nobody until that article. And yeah, I remember going in the hallway and like it was like a scene out of a movie where like everyone was reading it and like talking about it. And I was like, oh my God, I did it.
I mean, it was just so like the real star of the show is on second floor Flourish, where it was a wonderful idea. It was the kind of stuff that like blog started doing like a decade later. It was really good. That or one of my favorite stories, again, that we can tell on the podcast, was the story about when you were a kid, you were having like a baseball practice and they would announce like the player's favorite player when they were coming up to bat, and everybody was like, here comes Barry Bonds, or here comes Sammy Sosa, and then you come up and they're like, now batting, Orestes Destrade.
If you want to Google Orestes Destrade, he was a first baseman for the Marlins and had like the old school like dad 1980s glasses on, just to, like a total nerd. He ended up working for Baseball Tonight, but I had a couple of his cards growing up, so big Orestes Destrade fan.
We actually had a friend who got a video of Orestes Destrade telling you, hey, because you're such a big fan.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Let's see here. you're in quarantine with only a Nintendo 64. Which game do you choose? I'm going to have to default to you here because I never had a Nintendo 64 growing up.
Oh, I mean, there's two options. There's Mario Party or Mario Kart. Mario Kart, for a while, the guys who are going to be listening to this are probably going to make fun of me because I know I got beaten a lot in college, but I would say from like sophomore year of high school to senior year of high school, I was absolutely dynamite at that game. But yeah, then college happened. I didn't get to play as much.
Why are you acting like you like college somehow took away
from you? I know. I'm like, I didn't get to play as much. It's like, actually, I switched to GoldenEye. I know. No, but I mean, there's people out there that I played that could beat me. But on Wario Stadium, it's tough to beat me there.
Terry says, what are your top three Louisville basketball uniforms? By the way, we have an update on uniform gate from last week. Ryan Mann kind of cleared it up, and Jordan Ward did the same thing. The uniforms with the gigantic cardinal head on the left ass cheek, those were supposed to be the postseason uniforms last year. So we're not going to be wearing those this year. Everybody breathe easy. McMahon said that he actually liked the material. He thought they were he enjoyed the uniform. But Adidas just – here's what I will say, though. We've been begging Adidas to give us shitty postseason uniforms because we play the best when the uniforms are the worst. The infrareds, the camo sleeve jerseys, like the uniforms for the postseason got too good, and that's when we stopped winning. So now I feel even worse about the tournament getting canceled last year. We would have made a deep run because those uniforms sucked.
Even being so, I would have had a hard time watching that. I mean, that's how bad the uniforms were. I was like, my God, these are hideous.
As far as the top three Louisville, I only remember uniforms by year when they're like really bad. Like the ass rainbow from the 06 NIT team, the sleeve jerseys, the infrareds, like the postseason uniforms kind of stand out more. I think I remember really liking what we wore in 2014-15, the Montrez Terry Rozier year during the regular season, but I can't really, like they're almost always so close that I can't really differentiate the uniforms by year for the past decade. Can you?
No, not at all. And I think we had like a throwback a couple years ago that was just very clean and silk looking when we were wearing all white that just had like Louisville across the chest. I can't really describe it. It was just like a really sleek look. But yeah, I mean, like if you put them all in front of me, maybe I'd be able to pick them out. But yeah, my brain can't function that well to pick, you know, a uniform from a certain year.
VTE 502 says, for those of us who are trying to get on the same first name basis as co-host Daniel, is it Scott or Scotty? He said, sidebar, Scott has always sounded like it was short for something. I mean, besides Scotland. So I just refer to him as Scotterfield. This is the same, by the way, called you Dan the Insider Sennard, which is a nickname that I think really needs to stick. So you go Scott, obviously. You're not a Scotty guy.
Yeah, he's Scott. I mean, that's probably what he's called around his house. And, you know, if they're going to call him that in his house, then I'm going to call him that on the podcast.
If it's good enough for Beth, it's good enough for Dan.
100%. Yeah, 100%. You're exactly right. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, are you still a guy that, like, if you see, like, an old coach of yours, like maybe, like, an eighth grade football coach, like, would you call him, like, hey, coach, what's up? Or would you, like, say his first name?
I think it kind of depends on who it is, but probably I'd go coach. Like, if I ran into, like, an old high school coach, I'd probably say coach first.
Gosh, now that I think about it, I'm like, maybe I do that too.
We need to get together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I could see if I saw him, I'd be like, coach, what's up? But yeah, I don't know. For some reason, the first name when discussing Louisville athletics just sticks with me.
Danimal says, what is the next 80s tune to appear on social media and go back to the Billboard top 10? Just did from Fleetwood Mac.
Jesse's Girl.
You think?
I don't know. That's my probably my favorite 80s hit.
I was going to go with the Outfield Your Love because the lead singer just died last week. But I guess it would have happened last week. By the way, that song, it grows on me. Like, when I haven't heard it in a while, I love it. If I hear it too much, I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, I go through, like, stages with 80s music. Like,
me too.
I'll go on, like, a, you know, maybe, like, a week binge, like, once every, like, 6 months or something like that and get them all in. But I can't just nonstop listen to it.
Peapods, will you be addressing your feelings on chili, and will you weigh in on the noodles versus beans, and which one, according to some people, is the more heinous crime against chili? People have – this is where I kind of get annoyed with some social media. Like, people have very specific and extreme opinions on stuff like chili. And, look, a lot of kinds of chili are good. I've had a bunch of different kinds of chili. It's all good. If you want to put noodles in it, it's fine. Doesn't make it soup. If you want to put beans in it, it's fine. It can be good. Cincinnati chili with the cinnamon, fine. It's all good. It's your personal preference. I don't understand why people just get so upset about this stuff. But my wife makes really good chili. It's got noodles in it. My mom made it with noodles in it growing up. I've got no problem whatsoever. Now, you have Cincinnati ties. So what's your take on chili?
100% noodles is more than okay. I mean, we love Skyline so much that when we go to family gatherings for Christmas, we have Skyline catering. So, I mean, you're asking a guy that, I mean, of course, I when I go to, like, work events and stuff, everyone does, like, the crock pot chili. A lot of them don't have noodles in it. But I've always been a huge Skyline guy. Definitely, like, a four-way, two-coney order guy. So yeah, I'm team noodles. If kind of that's the question you're asking, the spicier the better.
I'm with you on that too. I'd always load up on the spice. Daniel Mudd, terrible lawyer, terrible football player, terrible NBA to Lou executive. He asks us, who's a better 3-point shooter, you or Dan Zone? I've got to default to you there. That's gonna be you. I mean, you're definitely better at everything related to basketball than I am.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really, I'm trying to be as humble as I can, but yeah, I would say it would be me. The one thing I actually did above average. And that's the reason I, you know, my basketball career at least advanced to senior year of high school is because I could shoot the three. Everything else I was average to below average at.
I mean, it's the only thing I can do in basketball is shoot. So back in the day, I think I could have been competitive with you. I mean, if we played a one-on-one game at any point in our lives, you would have destroyed me all the time. But shooting, I could have at least kept it close. But you were a pretty knockdown shooter. So
yeah, we played on a whatever you would call it, like a team in college.
It's called intramural, like, thing.
Intramurals. I couldn't think of the name. We played on an intramural team, and you ran the point. I thought you did a good job. You didn't overshoot. You facilitated when you need to. And somehow the team we were on, which did not have that many skilled basketball players, almost won that intramural tournament, which might have been the greatest sports feat that I would have accomplished in, you know, all my
years. Semifinal loss is still haunting after
all. It really does. God, that pit. We had a lead and squandered it. I still get pissed about it.
Yeah. Let's see here. Ian says, general question here. Best prediction for starting five this year coming up in basketball? I know Shannon wrote a story about this for the Courier Journal. Shannon, not Sharon. I don't remember exactly who she projected. She saw practice a couple weeks ago. I think that, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I feel like four spots are taken for sure. David Johnson, Carlick Jones, who now has won the gold jersey 2 weeks in a row, Sam Williamson, and then Malik Williams. The question is who steps up and takes over at the four, or do they bump Sam down to the four and put somebody else in at the three or the two? There's been a lot of hype about Jalen Withers. My best guess as of right now is that Chris Mack uses Charles Midland, the grad transfer from San Francisco, as sort of a Dwayne Sutton guy. I mean, that was when Midland committed to Louisville, he said their big selling point was they wanted him to guard the best opposing offensive player. He wants to be a defensive stopper. He's going to be the hustle guy. He's going to clean up on the glass. And he's not – like, I don't think he could play the four as well as Dwayne did the last couple of years. He's more of a natural guard. He could probably play the three. But I think they'll find a spot. That's my best guess as of right now. Could be totally wrong, but I would go with that five. Do you have any sort of insight there, Dan?
No, you took the words out of my mouth. I mean, I can't really guess just because – we haven't seen Jalen Withers play, so we don't really know, you know, how good he is or what kind of impact he's going to have. But it kind of just depends on, you know, we do know that Midland can guard. We saw that with his 4 years or his 3 years in San Francisco. So, yeah, I mean, I trust Chris Mack there. And I think we might see it tinker maybe the first couple games, and it might not be a set in stone thing, and maybe around Christmas or so we'll be able to kind of figure out who these starting five are going to be.
The only thing that makes me excited, because it's weird this year with Jalen Withers, I mean, he redshirted last year, so we didn't get to see him in, you know, any game action. I think the only thing we saw from him was him winning the dunk contest at Louisville Live, and now we're not going to get there are no red white scrimmages, no exhibition games this year. So we're not going to see him until he gets into his actual first game action. But everybody who's been at practice, whether it's the local people that I know who've been able to go, or a couple of national guys, including one from ESPN, they've said the same thing. Like one of the guys at ESPN who watched practice a few weeks ago said Jalen Withers was awesome. And that makes me very excited because he's certainly an athletic freak. He's got great genes. His dad, Curtis, used to light us up at UNC Charlotte back in the day. So if he could step in and be a reliable option at the four or maybe the five, if Aiden Gahan's not ready to play big minutes this year, it's going to help us out a bunch. It's a weird team to talk about. And I know we'll talk about it more the closer we get to the actual start of the season. But I feel like we know David Johnson has a potential superstar. We think Sam Williamson could be a breakout sophomore. We know what Malik Williams gives us in the middle. And I think at this point, you can say we know Carlick Jones is going to be a solid player. Outside of that, like, no idea. Like, I've got no idea if any of these guys that were freshmen last year and didn't play much are going to be good as sophomores, or if Jalen Withers is going to be great as a redshirt freshman. Charles Midland's going to have to find his role. We'll see how he fits in all this. It's just such a – it's a weird team to analyze because there are more unknowns heading into any season than I can remember.
I absolutely think we have six solid players that we can rotate in and out, and that's great. I think the key to this season is going to be keeping Malik healthy. He's had some injury troubles in the past, and I don't know, you know, from a bench standpoint, what we're going to be able to bring in. I have no idea how much Aiden Gahan has improved. You know, he didn't really get a whole lot of action last year. I know we brought in our another big guy, Gabe. I'm blanking on his last name, but it seems like from that standpoint, we're not going to be as deep, but one through six, I'm saying that without seeing Jalen Withers play. You know, I'm just going off what other people are saying. It seems like all fans should feel pretty good about who we have on the floor. The reason I'm on the team is we just have, I would say, three to four. I don't know about Midland, but at least three guys in David Johnson, Sam Williamson, and Carlick Jones that we know can create their own shot at the end of the shot clock. And I think that's key to you know, having guys like that, because in Mac's first couple of years, we really didn't. We had a lot of spot up shooters, a lot of guys that maybe couldn't take people off the dribble. And it'll be nice to where, hey, you know, offense is getting clogged down. Let's just, you know, give it to one of these three and get out of the way. So I'm totally looking forward to it. I'm already amped.
Yeah, I have a lot of 2015-16 vibes with this team. And going into that year, I think like next to nobody had Louisville in their preseason top 25. And I kept saying, I think this is a team that's definitely top 25 good and could be even better than that, because I think Damian Lee is better than everybody thinks he is. And that wound up being the case. And I think Carlick Jones, we've had a lot of grad transfers. We've had some pretty good ones. We've had some just okay ones. I think Carlick Jones is going to be the best grad transfer we've had since Damian Lee. And he could wind up being even better than Damian Lee. And I think Menlin's going to fill a void as well. I think he can find a niche here and be really, really helpful for this team. So because of that, and because I think that David Johnson is an absolute star in the making, and Sam Williamson can be a star if he improves a little bit from last year. And we'll see how it was weird for him playing behind Jordan Wara last year. I mean, this is a guy who's been a star his whole life. We'll see how he adapts to being the guy at the three this year. So I think this team can be a lot better than some people nationally are giving them credit for. But again, more talk about that as we get closer and closer to November 25th and what should be, fingers crossed, the start of the 2020-21 basketball season. Last question here from Twitter, and it's the it's Halloween week. We got the game on Saturday. It's also Halloween Day. The videos have been creepy. Shout out to Justin Marshall for going to Waverly Hills. That was a terrifying video. But Halloween plans across the country are in sort of a state of flux. People want to know what our kids are being and what our Halloween plans are. We have Virginia was a puppy. We went to Boo at the Zoo on Sunday. She was kind of into it. I mean, really couldn't give a shit about the candy or the other kids. She just wanted to look at the animals and by the end of the time, just go home. So that was fun. But we're not going to do door-to-door trick-or-treating this year. I mean, she's too young to remember it anyway. And with everything going on, we're going to, I think, opt out of that for this year. But you've got three kids. The two older ones are old enough to really understand Halloween and be into it. So what are you guys doing?
Yep, we got Cam, the six-year-old. He's going to be Pikachu, which for people that are unfamiliar, he's a Pokemon character. I have no idea how he got into that. He collects Pokemon cards, so props to him for doing that. And then both my daughters, Lila, who's three, and Mallory, who's 5 months, they are unicorns. So, yeah, should be a good time. Although here in Columbus, we're supposed to trick or treat on Thursday. For whatever reason, they don't do it on, like, yeah, this is like the most just suburbia place to where they don't like to trick or treat on the weekends for whatever reason. So, and of course, it's 100% chance of rain tomorrow. So I feel bad for these kids. So
that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That's the dumbest.
I know. Believe me, I like have threatened to move back to Louisville because of it. I'm not happy about it, but. Let me ask you this. What was your all-time Halloween costume like when you growing up that you're like, this is my favorite one? For some reason, I don't see you being a guy that like got into dressing up a whole lot.
I always had weird Halloween costumes. I always did like I was Santa Claus one year. I was Snoopy one year. Like I always kind of like just try to like do something a little bit different. My favorite one, and I got on the news for it at Trick or Treat at the Zoo, Boo at the Zoo, is the year there was the baseball strike. I was a baseball player on strike. I had a big sign that was like strike or whatever put through it and like carried the sign around and was like in my, I think it was like a Rockies uniform. That was probably my favorite one.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've had a couple. You know, I've been Ronald McDonald, I've been Buddy the Elf, but I'd say the one that I probably is the most memorable because everyone was like, who the hell are you? Was when I was John Kruk, the old first baseman from the Philadelphia Phillies. And I had like a Phillies hat with like a ponytail hanging out the back. And I had like a Phillies sweatshirt where I put a pillow in my stomach. And then I markered on a brown beard. I was like 8 years old at this point. The Phillies had just made the World Series. And I had like a thing of Big League Chew that I just went around chewing everywhere. So I think like literally at 8 years old as John Kruk, no one has any idea who the hell you are. So shout out to my mom and dad who somehow got on board with that.
That's incredible. I love that the first two costumes you named too were costumes that you had like from college, like not as a kid. But
yeah, this is true. Yeah, they were both hits.
Reminder again, if you guys haven't subscribed to the pod, please do so wherever you can find podcasts. Also, I should mention, I think the audio quality is going to be better after this podcast. We got some new stuff coming in that I think is going to help us out a little bit here. No guarantees. So if you love the charm of the recording from a public restroom on the moon quality of this pod, it might well continue. We'll find out. And again, if you can give us a review, if you can give us a 5-star rating, it helps out a lot. We have one new review this week. I'll read it. And the subject of the review, the title is just Brad Giannini, which is fantastic. And he says, awesome podcast. Love the laid back and informative info Mike and Dan talk about. It's the best place to listen and learn about Louisville athletics. And we'll definitely get a laugh throughout the pod. And then he says, I wanted to let you guys know, my dad and I talked about favorite Louisville basketball players, and my father to this day still thinks that Brad Giannini is one of the best point guards to ever suit up for the Cards. If that isn't one of the most, quote, dad-type players, because he played 7 minutes of fundamentally sound basketball game, that must make him the best point guard for Louisville. And if you were really thinking what his second favorite player was, it was Chris Current. Well done.
That really, when he said that, like, if that's the most dad thing ever, that actually sounds exactly like something my dad would say as well.
Oh, so my dad 100%. He's very accurate. I think my dad did say it at one point. We also have to tell the story of you and I at Molly Malone's. I think after the UConn regular season finale in 2014, where Giannini and Current were both there, because I don't think they're contractually not allowed to go places in Louisville without one another. And I drunkenly made you pick who your favorite was right in front of them. I was like, man, like, who are you going with, Giannini or Current?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like, I'm glad you remember that, because I sure still don't. It's like, that night got a little fuzzy for old Dan.
It got away from us. But I think you didn't pick. You did the right thing, which was not pick. But shout out to – I know Chris Current listens to this podcast. Shout out to Chris. I don't think Brad Giannini does, but that's okay. We love both you guys. You guys are the best. Dan, do you have a Dan in the Dumps this week, or are we punting again?
I'm sure after Halloween, our kids, they have a hard time handling any sort of sugar or candy, so I'm sure we'll have massive breakdowns over Halloween at some point. So talk to me next week, and it could be a different story.
All right. We'll have a second pod this week coming up here on Friday to preview the Virginia Tech game. We'll also talk about any other news that may happen over the course of the next 48 hours. But until then, until we talk to you guys again, please subscribe to the pod if you can, and we'll talk to you next. Go Cards.
Go Cards.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.